Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, 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 everybody. This is Lakeeta Long. I am your host for Mental Mondays, and we're so awesomely excited to be on our calls. You know, every Monday, this is all we do on our Mondays. We start off with a live video feed on Facebook, and it's been phenomenal. And then we get an opportunity to talk to all of you people in radio land, and we are here. And I'm so excited that on today we get to talk to a wonderful, powerful woman that I came to know by way of research, and she was popping up in everything. Her name is Dr. Mary Lamia, and she has a career-long passion for encouraging emotionally awareness in adolescents, adults, and preteens, and it shows this in all of the books that she's written. She's an author about emotions and how you understand yourself better, and she talks. She even has a book called A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings, and that's an upcoming book, and I'm really looking for that because I have two kids that are very self-willed, very opinionated, with a lot of emotions. So I'm looking forward to having her to share some wisdom with me so I can be a better mom to my little ones. The one thing I wanted to bring on about Dr. Lamia is that when I contacted her, she was so humble. She's got 40 years in the psychology field. She's a clinical psychologist. She writes for a host of different blogs, one in Psychology Today, Therapy Today, and How Do I Date websites, which illustrates, you know, her complete endeavor to convey a true understanding of emotions and the significant role and how it makes us become who we are. So without further ado, I would like to welcome everybody that's listened to the call, my guest, your guest, and our expert for tonight, Dr. Mary Lamia. Dr. Mary, God bless you. Thank you so much for being on the call. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Lakeeta. It's a privilege to be on with you. By the way, the children's book has been out for a number of years now. There's one for children on emotions. There's one for adolescents on emotions as well. And young adults.
Oh, I love that. Oh, my God. I love that because I can put this on. And what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to put this on to my Facebook fan page and shoot it out to all the people that are connected to my website so that they can also get the book. I believe in promotion. I believe in reading and sharing information. So I'm super duper excited.
Well,
my babies
what's
are.
What's been really funny about those books is that parents remark that they've learned something because, you know, we don't learn about emotions in school, especially, you know, parents never learned about emotions in school. A lot of kids do now, but those of us who are parents just weren't taught about emotions and how to understand them. And so many people think they have to manage their emotions or stuff their emotions or do something with them. Some drink them away. But emotions are there to inform us. They're there to help us pay attention and tell us what's going on in the world. And people don't realize that.
And you know, you said something, and I want to just piggyback off of that. I want to jump right in there because I have an 8-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter. Both are very delightful. They are of biracial ethnicity, and so they get a chance to split time with their grandmother. And I love the bicultural exchange that takes place, and so they're learning so many things. And, you know, my kids are very vivacious and very you know, self-willed in terms of they have a lot of the ability to do things. So tell us, give us what as parents, well, first of all, let's go back. Why did you even start studying about emotions? What triggered you to discuss, find out more about emotions? Share with the audience.
You know what? I don't even know how that started because it started so long ago. If you are a psychotherapist for almost 40 years, that's all people talk about are their emotions. And I realized that many people just don't understand them. For example, a lot of people go to therapy because they have anxiety and they want to get rid of it. Actually, anxiety is a friend. You know, the warning signs of anxiety can be very helpful if you respond to them appropriately. You know, anxiety helps us sharpen our focus, helps us think on our feet, and gives us energy. So, you know, when we fear it, sometimes it leads us astray because we think we're not supposed to feel it. But, for example, if you have to get something done, you might feel very anxious as though you're not going to have enough time or you're going to fail or you're not going to be able to do it. But anxiety is actually there to help you pay attention. And if you see it as something that will help you focus rather than something that will disrupt you or interrupt your focus, you can use it to get something done.
So how does, and that is just so powerful because I had read this book some time ago because my kids always feel like I'm always rushing them. And the truth of it is I probably am. I'm always, let's go, let's go, you know, even if I get them up early. And so we were always sort of taught to, you know, not be anxious and things of that nature. And so how do we redirect?
Oh,
right.
Look at
how
that
do we
anxiety
redirect?
You have. What does it do?
Right.
That anxiety you have about your children helps you protect them because it helps you anticipate and plan and think about what might happen and warn them if you need to. The problem is a lot of times parents impose that, the thoughts that come along with their anxiety on their kids, so they make their kids afraid. But anxiety is really important for a parent to have because if we didn't have anxiety about our children, would we ever really protect them? We wouldn't anticipate what can go wrong.
Wow, that is so true. I mean,
so that's
I'm
good
really
that you're anxious about your kids. You don't want to be too anxious, and a lot of times kids grow up fearing certain things because their parents fear them. If you tell your kids they can't jump on a trampoline because they're going to break a leg, you know, they might fear getting on a trampoline. Well, unless they try that trampoline and they don't break their leg, they won't know that you may be wrong. But, you know, we don't want to impose so much anxiety on our children that it makes them fearful, but we want to help, we want to use our anxiety, help them pay attention.
I love that. So how do you redirect anxiousness and make it a productive asset to a child's life? How does one do that?
What were you thinking in particular about that? I'm not
like,
sure.
Like, for example, you know, if you see a kid, like one of my kids, she reads a lot, so she's my reader. But she tends to try to be a little bit of a parent to her brother, who's 8. And I do all the responsibilities. I don't let her do anything with him. But so she gets a little anxious when if he's not on top of his stuff or if he doesn't do certain things. So how do I redirect her anxiousness or you know, hyperness towards, you know, trying to parent him? How do I redirect that energy?
Yes, but you've given your daughter a sense of responsibility for others. Isn't that what we all should have as a sense of responsibility for others? So you've given her that sense of responsibility. However, in a way, it's sort of getting misused because she thinks she's scared. She wants him to be successful, so she tells him what to do or directs him in some way. And so she's worried. So can we get him to reassure her that he will do it? And how could she trust him that he's going to do it? And that's what she's looking for, is some reassurance.
Wow.
Because she
that's
doesn't
so
believe
good.
It, right?
Because she
doesn't. Let's say a kid, you know, if some kids come home and they have to do their homework right away, because if they don't do their homework right away, they don't feel good about going out and playing or doing something else. But then there are other kids who want to go out and play first and do their homework later. Now, I mean, that would make a parent who does things ahead of time very, very anxious, because they would think that the kid is not going to do it, when in fact, outcome is always important to look at. So if you said to your daughter, Let's just look at what he does and let's look at the outcome. Does he end up doing what he's supposed to do even if we don't tell him? So let's take a look for a week at what he does. And if he fails, then we know we have to do something different with him. But let's just give him a week to test it out. Let's do a little bit of research.
I love that.
So it's very important, whether you're a parent or a sibling or whatever, to look at what's the outcome. Because if you nag somebody because they're not doing it in your time frame, you never really know what the outcome is going to be.
Wow.
So it would reassure her. It would be a way for her to reassure herself that he's going to be okay.
That's good. Now, that's really good. I just had my little, light bulb go off because I think that that is exactly what she's trying to seek after, is to make sure he's okay and for her to feel the reassurance of that. And speaking of that, one of the biggest things that we got in terms of response.
I wonder where she got that.
I know. I wonder too. And I'm the youngest. I'm the sixth child out of seven, so I'm the youngest girl out of seven kids. And so,
but I'll bet you kept everybody in line.
I did. It's so funny because even as a young kid, that was just kind of my thing. Like, what is everybody doing? And are we going to get with it? And let's do it. And, so it's really, really interesting. And I realized after doing some research and doing some reading, growing up, I had sort of the rescuer's identity for a while. And then I kind of came to myself probably when I was around about 20, 21 years old, and I realized, okay, this is not helping. I was in graduate school, actually. And I remember saying, oh, no, there's a difference between helping and rescuing. And so speaking of that, when we look at, anxiety and all of that stuff, so let's segue into something that got such a great response today on the live video. I had looked up an article, and when the article popped up, I clicked on the article, and who was the author? Dr. Mary Lemire. And I thought, I love it. I love it that you were the author of the, there was a couple of articles, and I'll tell you which ones I referenced on the video, was Your Need to Rescue Yourself from Rescuing Others. And it was on the Psychology Today. And you talked about that the rescuer's initial stages in the relationships, they're happy, altruistic. As time goes by, they feel increasingly unhappy, disappointed, critical, powerless, et cetera. And I thought to myself, I know so many people like that. Tell me a little bit about your concept about the rescuer. You put it in terms of the knight in shining armor. So give us a little bit of a backdrop on the rescuer and that whole process.
Well, you are exactly right. Rescuing behavior is the result of the ways in which people have adapted to their childhood experiences and the beliefs they developed about themselves and others based on those experiences. For example, if you were raised in a family where you are highly empathic and you sense somebody's helplessness or need or sadness, you might be very tuned into that the rest of your life. My co-author and I basically describe four types of rescuers in the book, The White Knight Syndrome. There are people who have a high level of empathy and or are driven by their own guilt, like guilt that they can't do something. So there they are, always trying to help people to kind of prove themselves wrong that they can make a difference. And then there are rescuers who attempt to heal their own sense of inadequacy or shame. Mm-hmm. So they rescue people in ways that hide their own inadequacies. Ooh. Then there are those who have a real chaotic inner world and a fear of abandonment. And under the guise of rescuing, they really want to control their partners. They're bad guys and girls.
So,
who are abusive and controlling and manipulative may look like they're saving somebody or rescuing somebody from their family or their world or anything else, but really they have a need to control. And those people who hide their own sense of inadequacy or shame, often they rescue people and then they are like the guru to them. But really it's to hide their own inadequacies. There is a fourth category, and those are people we describe as balanced in their rescuing. These people have a healthy sense of themselves, and they're able to self-reflect, and they expect reciprocity in their relationships. Their relationships are not one-sided. They're the Lakitas of the world, the balanced rescuers.
Yes, and you know, and I so appreciate that too, because I was sharing with somebody the other day. They were like, wow, they met me actually in person. But when they met me, I was very much in the backdrop. I was very much, because I'm really an extrovert for my call and for the public work that I believe that I'm put on this earth to do. But I totally get really shy, introvert on the back end. Like, I don't go to folks when I'm coming to an event. If I see you and I know you, then I'll make the beeline and go. And
Because you have a great ability to self-reflect, and we found that balanced rescuers do self-reflect more than anybody else.
Wow, that is awesome, because I do a lot of reflection. I will spend time with me because I'm always, you know, on the go and empowering and inspiring, but I like to spend a lot of time with me, which is why I think Mental Mondays might be a very powerful tool for people. People are listening, but people are actually applying the various things that they're hearing. And so that makes me really happy. From we did our topic on sexless marriages and how to sizzle the bed and what we need to do to deal with mental fatigue. And now coming to this space and place, we dealt with disappointments and soul rejection. And now we're here at rescuing behaviors. And how do we stop rescuing people? And particularly, you know, if you have some thoughts about, I had several different pastors to chime in on the video this morning, as well as to inbox me to say, one, they love the topic, two, thanks for the information, and three, how do they, as a caretaker, spiritual leader, continue to help people in their spiritual path but not rescue? Can you speak to that?
Oh, yes. So, you know, people of faith often have an inclination to rescue. Let's call them good people. Good people often assume everyone else is good. And so they assume if you give enough love or resources or money or forgiveness to another person, eventually that person will come around and be good themselves. Well, that principle doesn't always work. It's more likely to work with children than with adults, but it's really difficult for somebody who rescues and who really is good and wants to give to realize that not everyone is that way. Even deep down, they're not good. I mean, they're not horrible, but they're a victim of their circumstances and how they adapted to their childhood. And so it's important really to have a balance in how you see people, because you can get into a lot of trouble if you're trying to rescue somebody because you make excuses for their bad behavior. And you continuously make excuses for their bad behavior while all the while they're making excuses for their bad behavior. And you don't realize it. See, it's so hard that it's sort of like good people who have a lot of empathy, a capacity to put themselves into another person's shoes, really don't recognize that there are actually people in the world who do not have that capacity.
So
that
true.
They have perceptions. They know they can sense another person's weakness and they could use it for their own advantage, but they really don't have empathy for you. And so, you know, a basic principle of good people has to be not everybody has empathy. And how are you going to test that out? Well, for one, there has to be reciprocity in the relationship.
Ooh,
you know,
that.
And how well are these people able to reflect on themselves? And what progress do they make? Are they only just taking and not making something of that, really? It's really very sad that there are some people whose circumstances in life have led them to become predators just because that was the only way they could adapt and survive. That doesn't mean we should ignore them, but you have to be careful if you're a good person who likes to give and you have a lot of empathy that you don't get used.
Wow.
And it's easy to get used. And often
yes,
we
is.
Get used because, you know, we for the same reasons I told you, you know, of the different white knights, some people get used because they're just so highly empathic and they don't see the difference in people, or they're driven by guilt as though they have to make a difference. A lot of people who have survived very, very difficult childhoods want to help other people because they survived and they did well, and so they think everybody could do it. Doesn't always work that way.
Wow.
I would love to believe that everybody can be rescued, but actually it's not the case. And actually you're not doing them any good if you try to rescue them and you have all the empathy and you have the guilt and you want to make things better for them, because that's not reality for them.
Wow. Love that.
Just like if you see somebody who pulls the wool over your eyes, you want to make that clear to them.
Exactly. Yes.
Just
exactly.
Like it doesn't help children if they lie to you and you just let it go by. It's important to give people the reality that you see.
Very interesting. So when we look at, and just so for those of you that are just, you know, chiming in or just joining us, I'm Lakita Long. I'm the host for Mental Mondays, and we're just so excited to be able to interview. I feel honored and super duper blessed to be able to interview someone that's right here in California, that has been everywhere, has written for every publication, Dr. Mary Lamia, and she's a clinical psychologist and likes to focus on an array of different topics, but her love and interest as a psychoanalyst is to look at emotions and the role that it plays in our lives, and particularly how we navigate and vacillate in those roles. And we've been talking about rescuing behaviors and why we want to be a rescuer. And so now what I wanted to do is to help that, if we can, in these next few moments, let's give that rescuer out there that knows that they are harming themselves to some degree, how do they stop being a rescuer? What are some steps? That is a tough one. But give us some beginning steps. We're going to have you back. If you're scheduled for minutes, we're going to have you back a couple times on different topics. But give us some steps about how do we get away from being a rescuer? What do we need to do?
Well, first of all, relinquishing our hope that someone will change is hard to do because we feel like a failure, so it shames us. But you know what? Disappointment is one of the hardest feelings for people to feel. It makes us sink. And so whether we're disappointed in ourselves because we didn't help somebody else, or disappointed in the other person, you know, at some point we have to give up hope. And it means you failed to get what you expected. And people have difficulty accepting failure. You know, they want to maintain their power and control and feelings of efficacy. Sometimes for some people, giving up hope makes them face the same feelings they were avoiding in the first place by rescuing somebody. You know, that deep down, maybe we are helpless, that we, mm-hmm. like your daughter, you know, it doesn't work to tell people what to do. And they have
right.
to do it for themselves. And you have to put them in a position where they can help themselves rather than you are always doing it. So in any relationship, I think, not just rescuing relationships, we have a difficult time being disappointed when it's not working. And so it takes some self-reflection. And usually your emotions give you some clues that something is going wrong. Like you start feeling depressed, or you start feeling inadequate, or you're angry at the other person all the time, or the other person isn't giving you what you need, or you feel like you're doing all the giving and not getting anything back. So your emotions will give you some clues that things aren't working right. Unfortunately, people don't like to pay attention to them because they don't want to be disappointed. So instead,
wow.
you know, they might start drinking too much, or they might start eating too much, or they might start not wanting to get out of bed or attending to their work or whatever in order to avoid feeling disappointed and helpless.
Wow, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking and I'm reflecting and responding to individuals and I mean those 30 minutes went by so quick, and I just want to share with the audience. Listen, we are going to be here every Monday. We normally are at 8 o'clock, but I think that 8:30 might be sufficient, give people time at least to breathe from being at home. And so we will be back here. I will let you guys know when Dr. Mary Lamia is going to be on. She is just totally blessed me in terms of got me thinking about a lot of things and for me to process and me to read and for me to share. Listen, go to her website. I want you to go to her website, and I want you to, and that's Mary, it's www.marylamia, that's MarylamiA.com. Mary Lamia, she's local here in the beautiful state of California, and she's a psychologist, psychoanalyst, professor, and author, and she really does understand the concept about emotions and what it does for us. And so make sure you chime in. Dr. Mary, it is my honor. Oh, my gosh, it is such my honor to just have you on the call today, and I appreciate you. I love you for your genuine display of professionalism. Of the time I first called you, I learned something from you in the first minute and a half, and I'm a connoisseur of information, and I love to be taught. And so I thank you so much for your 40-plus years and doing great work, and I appreciate
Lakita,
you so,
with
so much.
With
yes.
your energy, you are going to save the world. You're going to do it. So just keep on doing what you're doing.
Well, you heard it here, right here. We just want to, I'm the people's therapist. My mother called me that when I was 14 years old, and while she is gone and no longer with us, I'm still the people's therapist. I'll help anybody, and I need to pass my exam. But for right now, I am the people's therapist, and we will help you as whatever way we can. And when we can't, we've got plenty of people like Dr. Mary Lamia. We can send you to in her schedule.
And I'm going to harass you until you do your exam.
Yes, please harass me. I need some harassing. Listen, everybody, I'm your host. This is our quote: obstacles are things that are seen when you take your eyes off your goals. Keep your eyes focused, and you will accomplish everything in your grasp. Have a wonderful day. God bless you. And please know, God bless America. Mwah! Blessings to you.